Welcome to this week's edition of the William Hill Creates a Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. Kenny Barler, your usual host, could not make it tonight. He's out of town, so it's Josh Nagel hosting for the time being. And we have a couple of our usual contributors here, so we'll introduce them real quick. Mainstay of the show, John Stevens, how are you?
Yo, Josh, what's happening?
Too much. We got a full slate of pro football is great and everything, but it's college football championship weekend, pack basketball, bowl games announcements. We got everything going
on. All kinds of stuff. I love it.
All right, our other participant tonight, haven't seen him in a little while, but for a while he was a pretty regular show guest. Tommy Thompson, how are you?
Fantastic. Yourself?
Doing well.
I'm looking forward to this weekend. I mean, we got college football, college hoops, some pretty good NFL games, and of course we got boxing and UFC, so.
Yeah, that's something we could get to. It's pretty crazy. There's that as well. It seems to fall out of the limelight with all the football going on, but UFC is a decent fight card, and then the Anthony Joshua Ruiz rematch is tomorrow night. So if you're into the combat sports, there's plenty of that too. Let's get real quick, kick off the week in the college football. We've got the Pac-12 championship game, and that's just about to kick off right now, so we might as well get to it. Utah opened up about 5.5-point favorite. Looks like it's going to close 6.5. I took a piece of Oregon today because it actually hit that key number of 7, but not too long. 7 for just a little while back down there. What I've been surprised about, though, is the total. The total opened like 50. It's going to close 45.5. I don't know what you guys think. I could be on the sucker side of this, but I took the over with the thinking of this. Utah plays this great defense. So does Oregon. I'm just thinking so many explosive playmakers on both sides. If you look at Utah, still has a relatively weak schedule. USC, their only loss, scored 32 on them. Washington, who played them to the wire, scored 28 on them. So, you know, they're shutting down the Arizonas of the world and just the weaker Pac-12 opponents. I'm wondering, same thing with Oregon. I mean, they play higher competition. They give up some points. And even though the weather, it's looking like Santa Clara is not going to be as bad as people thought. It's not raining yet, whatnot. But I just think 45.5 is such a small college total. I think there's going to be some real athletic breakaway plays. I had to take the over.
Yeah, and that's the key, is what you said, a college total. My first inkling was, the way Utah does play defense, was leaning towards that under. But as it keeps going down and down and down, I'm against the public with this one. You see 45.5 in a college championship game? I got to jump all over that.
I agree. I just think about it. Justin Herbert's going to be a top, five NFL draft pick. You got a great Tyler Huntley, a great dual threat guy. Just, again, to me, it's just the explosiveness and the athleticism. Would it be a surprise at all if this game were 24-21 at halftime?
Not at all.
I think they're going to do some scoring.
And that's the thing as well that Utah does play defensively. There are so many weapons on that Oregon offense, starting with Herbert, that you're going to see a big play here and there. I think with almost every possession that they get. So I'm not saying going to the house or anything, but they're going to get their chunks. And 45.5, it just seems like I don't see a 17-10 type game or anything like that. I think that there's going to be some fireworks in this game.
Now, what do you guys think? I mentioned I took a piece of the underdog, especially at 7. I thought it was a great number. Utah, it's no joke. I mean, they've covered 8 straight games, but again, it just barely a couple times. But huge numbers against weak teams. I just feel like when they finally play in their own weight class, I don't know if they're a touchdown better than Oregon on a neutral field. To me, it would be just fitting, too, to watch the Pac-12 kind of cannibalize itself in the playoff. Because obviously, if Oregon wins, no Pac-12 team is going to the playoff for the third straight year. But that's just the way it goes. And Oregon being kind of pegged as that front runner to be there. This is their championship in terms of they stand no chance. Why not? I feel like the full touchdown was the way to go.
And I had the same thoughts as you. As I went to the board earlier today when I saw it at 7, bet it, and it dropped down to 6.5. And I was a little, upset that I didn't get that, and I didn't want to lay the extra juice to bite up to 7. But the under on the same thing is I don't see Oregon not performing in this spot because this is the only chance they have. Because winning it, they're not going to get in. Winning it's going to probably put Baylor in if everything goes out the way it's supposed to be, and they want to be the spoiler.
And this is a team that should have beaten Auburn on a neutral field.
Yeah, so, again, Oregon only has themselves to blame, right? Yeah. They might have been able to fade a loss here, but that was crazy. Yeah, opening day, it's kind of funny. It seems like yesterday, but it was a few months ago, right? Holiday weekend, there they were up, like whatever it was, 21-3 in a neutral site, and they choked that away in the fourth quarter.
Absolutely gave it away.
And it comes back to haunt them. But Utah, same thing. It's kind of funny. Remember, that was when they lost to USC. Right. We're all here like, what? They were favored by 4. And USC more or less blew them out. And it goes to show you, obviously, nobody's invincible. Knew Utah was going to be really good. But the type of team, and it's worth noting, common opponent, Oregon won by 32 at USC.
Yep.
And so, that, you know, against better opponents with good offense and different schemes. I mean, Utah is not as invincible as their numbers show because, again, for the most part, they've just been crushing. They also ran.
So I better get this in now. I mean, this was a two-team parlay that I played 100 times 10 years ago. Oregon and over. Here we go.
Exactly. And, you know, it's funny, John, is back in the day, another thing I actually put on Sportsline today is I put in a pick for Oregon. Who would have thought? How rare is it, one, to Oregon to be the team that's, you know, being disrespected in the betting market, and they're being the team that the public's betting against? You never get to see it. So to me, I also, like, for instance, if you were to do that six-point teaser, sometimes we like it, you could get even money on. If you took 6 points on both sides, what do you think about Oregon, you know, plus 12.5 over 39.5?
Oh.
I mean, come on, that's a pretty comfortable position.
Believe that one.
So right now, again, we're just going through the game because we're watching it just here on the big screen at the Cal Neva Sportsbook, and, you know, kickoff's going to happen any moment now, but if you got that William Hill app, mobile account on your phone, time to fire up that app, John, and get into your last second action. Of course, they'll have in-game all throughout. It's the only game going on tonight in Division I college football. They'll offer all kinds of moving point spreads, second half, you name it. But if you want to get in right before kickoff, now's the time. And, again, it appears to be going to close Utah minus 6.5 and 45.5. So more football, of course, all through tomorrow. All the major conferences playing their championships is really going to help the playoffs shake out. We'll get to all those in the following segment. But let's transition into Nevada football. And John,
you can skip that if you want.
Yeah, I was going to say. I can tell from the Kenny B ESPN Facebook page and John's other social media posts that he's a big, a fan of the effort that was given in last Saturday's game.
Yeah, and, I kind of went off there. If anyone who follows our Facebook page, I had quite a rant afterwards.
But let's
I've recently
again.
Taken that down, though, by the way.
So 33-30 in overtime, lost to UNLV. And it's just a bizarre thing so far in the tenure of Jay Norvell, because it's kind of funny because his predecessor, Brian Polian, well, he was winning like four games a year, but he didn't lose to UNLV. He got that one. So now we're going 7-5, an unlikely 7-5, and what a bizarre season. And to me, it was just fitting. It's like it's still very disappointing, but come on, the way this team's been going, I mean, to some degree you could see this coming, I'm thinking, because look at how the bookended the season. Opened it up by upsetting a big 10 team on your home turf, national audience, 11-point underdog. You win it. It looks like exciting times to come. Then you lose by 70 points the next week. I mean, the way this team goes, it's kind of funny. I was thinking, though, John, the one thing we hadn't seen out of this team all year we finally got, and that was a close defeat. But that's not what you want. That's not the time to do it. So you go on the road, the last two games of the regular season before this, tough a punch. You go in there, San Diego State, 17-point dog, and you beat them. Fresno State, 14-point underdog, you beat them. Suddenly it's looking like this could be an 8-9-win season. Come back home to the Rebels, who had announced the firing of their coach before the game, Tony Sanchez, as we always used to joke, their high school coach, because he was. Things didn't work out. It's weird. They showed little spurts of progress under him, but then the bigger picture, not so much. So not surprising they eventually moved on, but it was an interesting scenario that you don't see often, where the guy's sitting duck in terms of, or lame duck I should say, he's already fired but chooses to coach the final game anyway. I felt as though there'd probably be a little bit of sentiment where, like, this guy's on the way out, the players probably do, provided they like him, they're going to play pretty hard. But nonetheless, didn't expect to look up halfway through the first quarter and see a 17-zip deficit.
No,
like that.
No, not at all. And you know, credit to the Pack for coming back and sending that to overtime. And I thought Carson Strong really got better as the game goes on, which has kind of been his pattern, which is a good pattern to have. And they started making plays and getting after the defense was making the stops when they had to do it as well. And it's obviously unfortunate the way it ended with the brawl afterwards. You know, there's always going to be some taunting in this game. It just is. That, I mean, I was a Zony for years and years and years. I'd have been right in the middle of that. I'm glad I've kind of outgrown that, kind of. I was at the wall by that point. But
that was pretty crazy, John. What do you think? I'm sure you saw the video we all did that made the rounds of social media, right? The goalpost view of the thing. It's pretty crazy. The UNLV receiver catches it, you know, walks off, hey, touchdown, the game's over. Yeah. Then all of a sudden, you just see a little something happening. Like, whoa, yeah, 0-60.
He beelines.
Yeah, the melee just
over. Yeah,
erupts.
I know. And you know, I've been in that end zone for a lot of UNLV games. I've said a lot of unfortunate things and done a lot of unfortunate things. That one time the law had to get involved, honestly. So I can't really fault the players for reacting, because I'm sure there's some stuff getting spewed towards them. But you know, it is what it is. It's a hell of a rivalry. It gets really ugly. It's these teams absolutely hate each other. There's not a lot of respect between.
I know.
Teams.
You know what's funny, John, is they say that sometimes it's a cliche, right? Rivalry weekend. All these teams hate each other. And, like, you watch the game and whatever, nothing really happens. But it's kind of funny when you see that. I'm like, well, to me, not to condone violence or anything, but to me, that's what a real rivalry is kind of made of. Where, like, it is no holds barred. It's not an actual fight breaking out. It's not the most unlikely thing in the world.
Yeah.
If this happened at the Purdue game or any other game, that would be unexpected. Not that you want it to happen, but you expect it because of the rivalry. And I think this loss was more heartbreaking because we made the comeback and we had a better team, I think, than last year. And the last year, losing with that lead was devastating. But like John posted on his social media, you have to win one game as the head coach here at Nevada.
Yep.
And that is that game. And
it's,
I know
there's
the big thing about moving it to Nevada Day weekend, which I love.
Yeah.
But
I actually, it's funny. I talked to Mayor Cashell at the time about that. He was in the next box over. Now, this is a real humble brag right here. But because I always thought, what a perfect time to do it. And he's like, you know what? That's not a bad idea. And then they did the next week. I'm not saying it's because of me. They did it the next year. And I was like, okay, it makes sense to me. But then it went back to November. And it's just. And, you know, Chris Murray had a nice article about the attendance the last couple times at Mackey, 17,000, 16,000, when this used to sell out.
This used to, then that's what
and most of those games were in September and October.
I don't know, and that's what I was getting at is the Murray article. I don't know that that brings that many people back because everybody goes down to Carson for the parade and does everything. So if you have it a 7 o'clock start, you're still going to get those people that, you know, they pre-gamed all day down in Carson. They're not going to come back to
I think it should be always be a day game.
Yep.
And I think that it should be a little earlier in the year, you know. And I know there's a school of thought that if they do lose this game, that's going to draw fans or that's going to drive fans away. They're not coming as it is. So what are we worried about? So I don't know. The bottom line is, Pac's going to a bowl game. Great. It's a disappointment. But they had a good year. They're sitting at 7-5. We'd have taken that before the season.
For sure, and it's worth noting.
But don't lose the Rebels.
They went over their season win total, and I didn't see that coming, right? Their season win total, whatever it was, I think it was 6 or 5.5.
Five and a half.
I remember thinking, I'm not wild about that over. They're going to have to need some breaks, and they clipped it with room to spare. So, yeah, they proved me wrong. So, but let's talk real quickly, by the way, about potential consequences from the brawl in this bowl game, whichever one we get. Of course, there's all the bowl speculation, Idaho Potato Bowl or Arizona.
I'm hoping for the Cheez-It Bowl against Washington State. I've seen that twice.
That would be great. At least an entertaining matchup. But one thing I want to say that I found a little disappointing is right after the game, Coach Novarro was interviewed on a local channel for a show that I watch every week because it's actually some pretty good insight. They always interview him right after the game so he doesn't have too long to think about it. And I every week, Sunday nights, I watch that and I found
it
fairly insightful. So now I'm curious.
Wolfpack All Access, that is.
Yep.
That's our buddy Samudio and Margulies and everybody over there.
Okay. But I'm just saying, I wanted to check it out. I was curious about his reaction. I'll just put it this way. I was disappointed. I don't know what went on behind the scenes, but obviously all this just happened, and they know that, and it wasn't even brought up. And so it's like clearly, I mean, whether Norvell asked them, hey, don't ask about this or that, but you know your audience already knows about it. And I thought it was undersold the thing, and I just felt like it was incomplete to not have that addressed. So even if Norvell said, hey, I want to talk about this at all, what you do in that spot is the reporter say, okay, well, I have no choice but to ask you about it. So I'm going to say, hey, coach, what about the brawl? You say no comment until further notice, and we move on. But they did the whole 10-minute thing, and it was all about the game. I'm like, come on. You didn't bury the lead.
Yeah.
You dug, you left it in the grave and never brought it up.
Exactly.
So anyway, to me, that was just disappointing because now I want to know, obviously moving forward, we're going to see everyone's going to be reviewing the tape or whatnot. There's probably going to be some pretty severe on-field consequences for the players involved.
You know, I don't know because they've gone through that, and I read something about there were no suspensions that are forthcoming as far as – nothing's imminent, I guess you could say. So I don't know. It's news when there's not a brawl with the Pack and the Rebels, to tell you the truth. So it's nobody got hurt. Nobody, the fans, no one did anything too stupid. Call it good. Rebels win again. The cannon's red. Now they're going to be in their fancy new Raider Stadium next time we play them. And that will make it all more fun when we celebrate.
And I'm curious, by the way, so the coaching carousel starts around and curious who ends up at UNLV if they're going to get a decent leader to turn the thing around.
Did you see that they posted that job on LinkedIn.
Did they really?
They posted
Boy, I should get on there.
2 days ago. The head coaching position at UNLV is available to apply for on LinkedIn.
I'll be a secret agent. But my biggest fear is they just throw an ungodly amount of money at Chris Peterson.
Well, you know what? That's interesting. But, of course, since you bring it up, he just quit up at Washington ahead of their bowl game. A little bit surprising, but I didn't realize. God, time flies because Peterson was kind of a wonder kid when he got hired at Boise State, took it to much greater heights than Dan Hawkins. And still, you always sort of think of him as this younger coaching prospect, and now he's like 56 or whatever. Like, oh, no wonder he's a little burned out.
5 years?
Yeah, but you know what? Washington, I mean, he did a great job. It's just one of those things, though. You could say victim of your own success or whatnot. It takes him to the playoff in, like, the second year.
Yeah.
They never quite, again, reached those heights. But it's not like, obviously, he's doing a lot better. The program's in great shape compared to where he picked it up with. And for him to just say, hey, he's a little burnout, whatnot, and then his name's going to be thrown around there. But even that spotlight was much bigger glare at Washington than he was used to at Boise State. You got the impression he wasn't all that comfortable with it, but that was as far as he would go. So, John, I have a hard time believing, for instance, when his name's brought up, like, oh, he'll be the next guy they woo in there.
No, I don't think it'll happen.
He's not going bigger time. I don't think he's going bigger time at all.
I actually read on CBS Sports that he's one of the potential candidates for the Cowboys.
Oh, I mean, that would make a little more sense. I think they're all in on Urban Meyer, I think, if they can get that done. But as far as the UNLV job goes, I've read Jim Mora Jr. You know, there's names like that out there. You know, I bet that they, if they're smart, they go for a Big Five coordinator or something like that, someone with a little recruiting success. And it's a big opportunity for the Rebels right now, going into that stadium. And you know, it's kind of wiping the slate clean for them right now. And and it's always been a sleeping giant, whether we want to admit it or not, that if UNLV decides we want to start winning the football and put the effort and the drive and the money behind it, they can do it.
And you would think, especially with even with this last era here, it's kind of interesting because they took a risk. It was something you don't see every day, even with a well-known prep program. You don't see them going from high school to college, but what Art Briles once did. I mean, it's not totally unheard of, but they took a bit of a risk.
And Jerry Faust.
I don't think the entire tenure there wasn't a complete disaster. It's not like he drove it into the ground. They had some success. It looked like they were on the upswing. Let's face it. I mean, your blue chip quarterback has had a bunch of injuries. I mean, he's had a share of adversity.
He's 3-2 against the Wolfpack. Except, that's all he didn't know.
Yeah, and they were expected to be a lot better this year than they were. So I guess at some point the writing's on the wall, another 4-win season, you got to go in a different direction. But I'm saying, it's not as if they completely wrecked the program with that hire, and there may be a decent name out there.
Yeah. Well, you're going to get a lot of opportunity because every Saturday starting next year, you're going to have a pro team that's going to be in there that is going to be able to.
Well, the Raiders.
They get paid.
They get another pro team.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, exactly. But just for recruiting, are you not going to want to come play in a city that has a pro team and has all that potential?
Yep. And it's this state of the art stadium, and didn't the Fertittas build a new center for a new weight room and student center and all that kind of stuff for them? So that I think it's become a destination job. I think we might be looking up at the Rebels here coming up. I don't like to say that, but it's a fact.
Yeah, and it also remains to be seen, I guess, how much Gene Orvell. How much of the shine does it take off the season? 7-5 is a really good year by Nevada standards, and yet that's a bitter taste. You're not going to spit out
all
very much. But it seems like they're not going to forgive the guy. But what do you think? I mean, it's kind of funny, right? So he's like, oh, UNLV guy, 4-8, but it's dignified because he beat his rival. Or our guy, 7-5, and like, oh, do we really, we're not happy with him.
You have one job.
All right.
And you did not do that job.
It dimension is the Purdue, the Fresno State, the San Diego State, all of it. Done.
Well, if you go to think about it, all the losses this year are pretty bad because 4 of the 5 were absolute embarrassing blowouts, and the 5th was to your bitter rival. So it's pretty ugly.
Yeah, exactly. You can't pick anything worse. And, you have your old offensive coordinator come in here, Nick Rolovich, who is mentioned for the UNLV job as well. So
that'd be a step back for him,
I think,
with what he's been doing.
I think
Hawaii
so, too.
Hawaii should just throw some more money
at him. That would hurt me. That's
the only way you can get him,
though, is
Hawaii doesn't pay a nickel. So,
yeah,
that'd be rough. But anyhow, all right, we're going to go after our first break here, come back with some more college football on the William Hill Sports Show, ESPN 94.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show, ESPN 94.5 FM. Again, Josh Nagel filling in for Ken Barler, along with John Stevens and Tommy Thompson. So for the break, we're just doing a little bit Wolfpack's wrap up slash look ahead. But at 7-5, they will away a bowl invitation. And again, I guess we'll know by Sunday, right? By Sunday night, all the major, 40 bowls this year, all those slots will be filled and the games will be announced. So we'll know soon enough. But hopefully, if it's anywhere, whatever, within the general regional vicinity, Wolfpack will get a decent traveling fan base, and we'll see how we wrap up this season.
If they played at Maggie Stadium, I wouldn't go.
Yeah? So that's your means of protest for the...
No, I'd probably go.
Yeah. You would be there in the box.
Well, no, even if not, I don't know. It's hard. It's always hard when they lose to the Rebels. And, our buddy Joey Robinson lives here forever, but he's a big Rebel fan. And, we've had a lot of back and forth over the years. And, congratulations to you, Joe. I didn't mean one thing I just said.
All right, well, that's as close as bowl game for UNLV as they have had in a while, so they've got to just savor that win until next year again. So let's go talk about some more college football championships tomorrow with the conferences. Obviously, from early tomorrow to late at night, every single conference is going to have their championship game. We'll see how the playoff shakes out. But the first big one tomorrow morning, the first major one, is going to be the Big 12 Oklahoma-Baylor rematch. A few weeks back, Baylor squandered a 25-point lead, had a chance to knock the Sooners right out because they already had a loss to Kansas State. Instead, Baylor lost, and they have only one defeat. That's just a crazy turnaround. 2 years ago, Baylor had one victory. Seemed like a major rebuilding program. Now they're a win away from
one of the biggest scandals of all time they had overcome.
It's crazy how, what's funny too with Baylor, because obviously the same thing happened in basketball, but I'm still stunned at how quickly the basketball coach, Scott Drew, did the same thing.
Yeah.
I thought this team's going to win two games for 10 years. There's just no way to get out of this.
And especially because they're not exactly a traditional powerhouse, what I'm saying? They're not doing this at Texas.
Yeah, exactly. So you would think, as it was, it seemed like the height of the program's success was before all the scandal hit, and you didn't think, you're probably not going to get that talent level. But it's looking like they got the right guy, because Matt Rhule seems like a great coach, and he's taken all the process, the steps. A couple of years ago they were taking their lumps, and now they're right there. It's so weird, though, John. It's like all year, we talk about, we always use that comparison about the rubber band breaking or whatever with Baylor. Boy, have they gotten lucky, because I looked at some stuff today. Don't get me wrong, they're a very good, resilient team. But if you look at their resume, overtime against TCU and Texas Tech, they beat Iowa State by two. Just put it this way, a couple bounces the other way, and that's 8-4.
Yeah,
and they're not 11-1. Oklahoma struggles with them, but they had all those first half turnovers, pick six, and that allowed Baylor to jump out in front. I'm just curious, what we see this time, if the Sooners cut down those mistakes, I have to think that they probably have a pretty clear edge here. I'm not going to be playing a lot of chalks tomorrow, but I'm thinking about that one.
I think it's going to be a really good, close game down to the wire. I'm probably going to end up taking Baylor, especially if Oregon pulls this game out like we all think. At least they'll make it close as well. Baylor has to win. And Baylor probably sitting there thinking, we choked that other one away. Right. That's the only chance they're going to have to get it. I think.
And Baylor could win and still not get in, to be clear. If Georgia upsets LSU, the top four is set.
But
right.
Yeah, I think tomorrow, I've been looking forward to this, for a while. Just all these championship games that are meaningful, actually. How many years have we had where it doesn't matter the outcome?
Yeah.
This team's still in it.
For what it's worth, that's an AT&T Stadium. Jerry World and Oklahoma has played well there. They've won the last two Big 12 championships there. They're comfortable in that environment.
Yeah, no doubt. It's going to be when the Sooners go to Dallas, it's kind of a home game in its own in a weird way. But I like Baylor to keep it close here. Oklahoma just, I don't know, there's something about that team, especially this team this year. It's just that they're not as impressive as obviously they've been in years past. What Lincoln Riley's been able to do with, they're three very quality quarterbacks, honestly. Obviously, but to be able to have them play at this level,
what do you think about last week, John? I want to say maybe the best I've seen Oklahoma. That's a good win at Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
They're a fierce rival that's looking to knock them out, and Oklahoma State's no joke. And they put a nice beat down on them and kept
dominating. They seem to never have a problem with the Pokes.
For some reason, I got to say, they have owned Mike Gundy of late. Gundy got him once over 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But, for the most part, Lincoln Riley has owned him. And, I will say that. Gundy used to get the best of Stoops all the time.
That's right.
But not Lincoln Riley.
Not Lincoln.
Touchdown Oregon.
How about
Rod Lincoln.
Yeah, so the winner, let's put it this way. So Oklahoma's been in three of the five playoffs so far. I mean, they're looking for another one, make it 4 or 6. If they win, especially with the history on their side, obviously I think they have that real
brand
good
name.
Chance at that fourth spot, provided you know Georgia yeah. loses. But there we go. Again, it looks like 8.5. It opened 9. I've seen 8.5. 63 is now the total, down from 64. What do you think, by the way, Oklahoma, I think last week's most impressive defensive performance. They held the Cowboys to 16 points. Baylor makes their name on that. They had the best defense by far in the Big 12, 19 points a game to the opposition. I mean, I think Baylor, if they're going to be competitive, this has to go under.
You think so? Yeah.
They can't sit there and run up and down the field.
I don't know, man. Oklahoma's defense is such a sieve at times that it doesn't really matter. I like it over here. I like Baylor and over. I think that this is an old fashioned shootout right here. Okay. Big 12 shootout. Let's go.
So let's check out the AAC real quick. It's kind of interesting. This is Cincinnati Memphis rematch. They just played last week.
Yeah.
They played for the right to host the championship game. Of course, Memphis was at home. They won that one, though they didn't cover. It's weird. Cincinnati right out of the gate had things go. I think right the opening kickoff was returned for a touchdown, and they had a turnover, and right away they were down. I'm thinking like. Either set 10 or 17 nothing. It looked like they were just going to get smoked. But then Cincinnati settled down, got right back in the game. They took it down to the wire, and they covered. It's interesting because last week's spread was 14.5. Now it's 9.5. I think that's indicative of the respect for Cincinnati. Like the first spread might have been a little out of hand. Memphis is pretty clearly the class of the AAC this year. But you got to look, Cincinnati's a 10-win team with some pretty good physicality on the defense. It just seems like the Tigers at home are a tough thing to go against, but I mean, that's a lot of points.
That is a lot of points. And, you know, Mike Norvell, no relation, is a rising star in the coaching ranks himself. Speaking of which, not to get off track real quick, but Bruce Breslow, former Marist Sparks, sportscaster, local legend here, he's a Missouri graduate, and he posted on his Facebook earlier that Jay Norvell is one of the top five candidates for the Missouri job.
No, you know what, John, that was going around Twitter, and here's what's funny. I think it's just just satire, because I saw something, too, a couple of days ago where I think they were just joking around. They said, watch, Missouri's going to end up hiring Jay Norvell, thinking it's Mike, and just making a mistake. So I think it's just a joke. Wrong Norvell.
I'll have to message Bruce and let him know.
That went around as a joke.
He was on suicide watch after that, but it's this game in particular, though, the fact that they are at home, I'll take the Memphis Tigers here.
Yeah, and put it this way, it's just one of those, I just wouldn't want to go against them. Cincinnati's talented enough to cover, but I also wonder, you know, they did the same thing last week, same environment, came all the way back, didn't get there. It's just tough to face that 2 weeks in a row, and it's one of those things, going against Memphis at home is like at your own risk.
It's the old adage of it's really difficult to beat a team twice in the same year, let alone twice in 2 weeks, especially when you have a better coaching staff, a better, you know, better talent around you, and now you're at home. So same thing. I'm there's no chance I could take Cincinnati, even though 9.5 is pretty tall.
Right. All right, let's talk about the Mountain West. Speaking of our backyard here for competition, Boise State's back in the circle for a couple of years. They haven't even made the game, but they're there. So they had a bit of a rebirth this year. And speaking of Nick Rolovich and the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors, they're tough. It's kind of funny. I thought it would be a letdown spot last week. Army had 5 wins. They're looking to become bowl eligible, and I wonder Hawaii just kind of mailed this one in. That they did not.
Rolo does not let down, sir.
Smoked them. No. They scored at will. Army plays no defense. But regardless, I was impressed at least with Hawaii's focus. I thought they might have a let-up. They didn't. And it's unfortunate because I lost a bet on Army. But, Rolovich, I mean, to me, there's no doubt. Like, his coaching profile, his climb up the ranks has to start happening, because you would think he's got to start being mentioned for multiple jobs.
Yeah, and, you know, when they decided to move on from Polian, obviously Rolo was on the staff at that point. I've said it on this show, just hire Rolo, let's go. You know, that has nothing to do with, you know,
the personal curious,
thing
though,
I have with Rolo, but he's a player's coach by all indications. He's really innovative offensively, and he gets the most out of his guys. Hawaii was not supposed to be here. Absolutely not. They weren't supposed to be here. And, you know, for them to come in onto the mainland in a freezing cold game that night at Mackey Stadium and just beat the brakes off the Wolfpack was something else. So I think that if they have that same mindset, they can go to Boise. They can win that game.
Well, what do you think?
I'm definitely taking the 13 and a half.
That whole thing has been overblown in terms of why used to never be good on the mainland.
Yeah.
Rolovich has single-handedly changed that. They compete, and obviously you saw in Nevada, they win games now. But having said that, against some of the better opponents, they still got smashed. Like Washington beating by like 40, there's still the occasional blowout.
Sure.
I think personnel-wise, I think they're good enough. I also wonder if it's working against them when, okay, you're up on the Smurf turf and the snow. I'm not sure it's the best setting for the Warriors to
It's not the best setting, but they're not going to be scared. They're going to be prepared. And you give me two touchdowns, you think they can climb over that key number there?
Maybe. Well, here's the thing, John. Put it this way. It's at the solid 14 now. That's hard to say. When it comes right down to it, to me, that's probably a pass. But I'll say at the opener, at 13.5, I sort of like Boise. But, yeah, I'm going to lay off now, I think.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I think Hawaii easily covers the two touchdowns. Of course, we'll see what it gets bet down or up to, you know, by the start of game time tomorrow. Because I think that's noon, 1 o'clock game.
Yeah, 1 o'clock, same time as the SEC.
Yeah, and I also think that 64.
Great slot.
I think that 64 could be a little light, too, because I think it's going to be a shootout. So.
You're not rolling with that 6-0?
Not rolling with that 6-0.
It's interesting, though, because Boise still has, they've got the top defense. It's one of those, I mean, both offenses should have their way, but it makes you wonder if, you know, Boise State's probably going to make Hawaii earn it. I'm not sure it's just going to be one of the, you know, up and down the turf scoring fest.
But. Yeah. Is the weather going to be?
I don't have a current forecast on the Boise, but of course it's worth checking because half an hour before the game, you say, "Oh, look, check out Boise, and it's just a foot of snow." I mean, that could change things for you.
You know, as a Pac fan, as Pac fans, you know, there's another big rival we have that we respect Boise, but we want Boise to lose. We have Nick Rolovich, former Wolfpack assistant. Let's root for the Rainbows tomorrow.
All right, fair enough.
Whether you want to bet it or not, root for them.
And speaking of the midday's time slot, the big game, let's check out the SEC matchup real quick. You got LSU, who's 12-0.
Yes.
Yeah, they've just been slicing through the competition. Likely Heisman winner, Joe Burrow. It's kind of funny, last day of the year, though, that's when Kyler Murray ended up sneaking up. Like, so, for instance, if Joe Burrow just has a terrible game or gets injured in the first quarter and watch Jalen Hurts throws for 6 touchdowns, I mean, it could happen.
It's very possible.
The Heisman race completely turned on its head just on the last week last year, so you never know. You know how that could, right? Because it was going to be Tua Tagovailoa by far, and then he got injured and played horrible, then got injured against Georgia, and Kyler Murray ended up winning it. But you got Burrow thrown for a zillion yards game. It's crazy how LSU's offense is just, they used to just look for respectability. Now they're the second-ranked offense in all the land. They've only had a couple close games this year, and it's funny, even those they dominated, like Alabama, they led wire to wire. The Tide just kind of backdoored it, made it look close. And then, Auburn was a legit close game. But same thing, you didn't feel like they were going to lose it. Auburn found a way.
Auburn is so good.
They hung by a thread. But those were 2-8 SEC games, 2 1-score games is all.
It's teams like Auburn, not to cut you off, Josh. It's teams like Auburn this year that make me want that 16-team playoff because they could easily have – they could have 4 losses this year and be as good as anybody in the nation.
Exactly. Auburn's really good. And I agree. Like I said, I've been in favor of expanding day only because, look, no matter what happens tomorrow, there's going to be a team I think that deserves to get in. So just hypothetically, say Georgia beats LSU. Or come on. I mean, I don't think Oklahoma and or Utah, Oregon, you know, deserves to be left out. So just let everyone who deserves to get in. And to be clear, I don't like the criteria at all where people talk about, oh, if they went to 8, automatically qualify the 5. No way. Make them earn it. So, for instance, because by that criteria, last year, a 4-loss Washington team would have been in. They didn't deserve to be in.
Right.
They ended up winning the Pac-12.
Right.
So I just say, no, 8 best, period. And if you're 9th, that means you probably lost 3 games.
And listen, if it happens to be LSU, Alabama, Florida, Auburn, and Georgia, so be it.
Exactly. I just take the 8 best. I think we need to expand to that, but whatever. Probably within a few years we'll see that. Georgia, on the other hand, I think it's interesting. Speaking of hanging by a thread, I mean, it's crazy. They lost that game to South Carolina a while back. Looked like, how could they even get to the SEC title game? They've won 6 straight since then, and they've had a tough road. They've beaten, you know, Florida. They've beaten your Texas A&M.
Yep.
I mean, they've earned their way in there, and it's one of those deals, though, 11-1. Winning, it's similar to last year. Winning, you're in. Georgia lost 2 touchdown lead against Alabama last year. They were out, made the playoff 2 years ago, as we know, and lost to Alabama in overtime, the championship.
Yeah.
But no one, well, I say, with the exception of Auburn, John, that was 23-20. No other team has slowed them down that good, but here's the deal. Georgia's defense is even better than Auburn's.
Yes, it is.
So I'd say, for the most part, LSU's played some pretty bad teams. I like the Dogs here.
They played defense last week.
I like the Bulldogs to at least cover that big seven. Jake Fromm, I think their running game can eat up some clock. I feel like LSU might get there, but I like those points.
I like the points as well, and I wouldn't consider myself a fan of these teams, but I just love LSU, and I love Georgia. I've had some weird fascination with them my whole life, both these programs. And so for these two teams to be playing with these stakes, I just love this. I just cannot wait for this game tomorrow.
It's going to be a great game. I'm going to take the points. I love Ed Ogeron.
Oh, my God.
Do you
look like Paco to you?
A little bit, yes. Okay. He looks like an older, fatter Paco. Shout out to Gerald.
Yes, Gerald Vasquez, our old teammate.
But that guy, the way he inspires his team and rallies his team and just is amazing. But I think, I mean, Georgia knows this is a huge game for them. If they lose, you know, not necessarily they're going to be out, but I think it's just going to be a really tough, well-fought game, but I still think LSU squeaks it out.
Yeah, I do too.
I think LSU is going to win.
I think it's a field goal game. I think this is 37-34 LSU.
All right. We're going to go off to our second break, so please join us again in just a couple minutes here on the William Hill Sports Show, ESPN 94.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. So before the break, we went through a handful of the big games tomorrow, but there's still a couple left on the ledger for us to break down a little bit. So again, SEC 1 p.m. kickoff on CBS Georgia. LSU is -7 with a total of 55 there.
Are we all lined up on the Bulldogs here?
I believe so.
Wow.
I
might have to rethink this.
I thought you guys liked LSU. I thought maybe he did.
No, we were all on the Bulldogs. Right.
But Big Ten championship game is one of those, speaking of which, LSU, Ohio State, sort of the dream matchup this year, right?
Yeah.
It seems like 1-2 seems almost inevitable. It's a game I'd love to see. Teams got to do their part to get there. The Big Ten championship is Ohio State against Wisconsin, and we'll see. Ohio State's a 16.5-point favorite, total of 56.5, and I'm of the belief, if you like the Buckeyes, you'll probably bet it sooner than later. It's bound to hit 17, maybe 17.5.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things. Wisconsin's come on strong late. Good, impressive performance. I mean, a bad loss earlier to Illinois, but they've come on strong. They looked really good last week, knocking off their rival at Minnesota, dominated most of the game.
Is that their rival?
Yeah, they play for the Axe or whatever is every year. So, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
There's something there.
Big
but, to me, it's one of those things where I would think, at least on paper, Wisconsin, you know, has a chance to compete pretty well because of their style of play. Maybe they keep Ohio State off the field.
Yeah.
But I got to say, John, for four quarters, and the Penn State's been the closest thing in terms of someone to really take Ohio State to the wire and test them. But then, you know, sort of like a basketball team that's up-tempo, they just run you out of the gym. Ohio State does that, and I just think, even put it this way, I think Ohio State could play a respectable game, maybe be down a touchdown at the half. I don't see it for four quarters. I don't see Ohio State not pulling away.
Yeah, and, you know,
and doing another, like, 48-21 deal.
As much love as I have for LSU and the SEC in general and everything else, Ohio State's the best team I've watched all year. Just on a week-in and week-out basis, they don't get challenged. They really don't. I thought Michigan was honestly going to put up a fight last week. I really did. And I'm an idiot for thinking that. But just because Michigan had, you know, they'd ride to the ship and they're playing pretty well. And just it's just a next level, different brand of football that Ohio State's playing. And, yeah, if you can get this under 17, my advice would be to jump all over that.
Yeah, that was crazy, that Michigan game, because they did look improved. And here's what's funny, John, so much so that in the future markets, like sportsbooks offer spreads on games well ahead of time. Ohio State had opened up -14 over Michigan. Like, that's what pretty much the spread if you wanted to bet it all year. But it was after Michigan beat Notre Dame and had a couple other solid performances. That's when it went down. Eventually went down to what it was offered at, which was 9, 9.5. And then suddenly you watch that game and it's like,
we had 10-0 Oregon.
Yeah, it should be 14. I'm disappointed. It just took a touchdown off the board.
Listen, beggars can't be choosers now.
Who's a beggar?
But this, well, you're kind of begging right there, Josh.
Not really.
But no, listen. But this is what keeps these games under. That's the problem.
Yeah,
14-0 with the underdog right now. You're sitting pretty.
Well, did you see? I thought Herbert might have scored a second down play. Looked like the guy got in. Then they had a false start and got held out. And so it's like, but nonetheless, still the general positions we have, it ducks and over. It's looking decent so far. But hey, I'm greedy. I don't care. I got a 7-point dog. I want him up 21-0 if possible. But
so I just jumped back into the conversation you guys talking about.
Ohio State and Wisconsin.
And JD's talking about Ohio State looking like the best he's ever seen.
Defensively, I just said the best team this year. It's not
defensively by far
easy with the hyperbole.
this is the best defense they've ever had.
Yeah.
They haven't been challenged, but who have they played? I'm a Michigan football fan, but I didn't expect that. That nine to me was an easy lay, the nine against Michigan State or against Michigan.
You play the Big Ten schedule. With the Michigan State, Michigan, Penn State. I understand not all of them are.
They're not who they once were,
of course. But yeah, I get that. I just meant.
What was the toughest game on their schedule?
Michigan.
And look at Michigan.
What was the final? What do you mean, look at Michigan?
Well, the toughest game on the schedule ended up being Penn State.
Yeah,
it probably ended up being Penn State.
But do you not think Michigan's better than Penn State? I know how that game went down.
Put it this way. I was going to say, Michigan-Penn State on neutral field, I still think Penn State's probably
a
small favorite.
I mean, it's
close.
It really is close.
It is close. But nonetheless, two real respectable teams. And
And when you throw the rivalry into that. And everything that goes along with that, what Ohio State did to him, I was really impressed.
Okay.
And I hate Ohio State.
As do I, and that's what I'm saying is their toughest two games: Michigan, Penn State.
Fair
Both
enough.
Teams are not who we grew up knowing how great they were and how good they are. So, to me, I just think they're just overinflated.
I thought in about mid-October that Penn State was a real contender.
I mean, this was supposed to be a major rebuilding year, and they won 10 games.
Yeah,
Trace McSorley is gone, Miles Sanders.
Yep.
And they lost a ton of talent. They had like two starters back on each side of the ball.
Franco Harris isn't there anymore.
You're right. And they go 10-2. That's pretty impressive. So, nonetheless, let's move on to the ACC Championship. So that's your nightcap from Bank of America Stadium, 4:30 kickoff. And Clemson, it's kind of funny in these spots because they do this. They'll get tested. Early in the year, it was a one-point win over North Carolina. And sometimes it takes them a while to get going. And then when they do, Clemson just starts steamrolling people. You know, Dabo loves to play the no-respect card, whatever. And so here they are, minus 28.5 against Virginia, who came out of the Coastal. Virginia is a 9-3 team, pretty solid. Finally beat Virginia Tech the first time in 15 years. And you would think on paper, like, wow, Virginia plays pretty strong defense and they got a pretty capable offense. And yet I never bet Clemson against these spots because this is a 58-0. This is what Clemson does at this time of year. I'm just not taking the underdog.
No doubt about it. They just lay in wait and just waiting.
And for what it's worth, Virginia's decent, but if you've seen their quarterback, Bryce Perkins, he scares me because he has no pocket awareness. Against good defensive teams, he never sees the rush coming. He gets slammed. And against Notre Dame, he fumbled like 10 times. Clemson plays better defense than Notre Dame. I mean, he's gonna turn it over, and I'm just saying, it's fool's gold. As much as it looks tempting, look at Virginia's resume; it's pretty solid. I can't do it. And I love to make a case for the underdog.
I don't touch this game. I think it'll be a fun game to watch, but it just goes back to, you said, the North Carolina game. How much do you think Mac Brown wants to say, you know what, let's kick that extra point, go into overtime, and see what happens? I think North Carolina wins that game. Early
possibly.
On in the year.
And you know what's funny? You mentioned
it happens
that?
Every year against
Clemson. Because I think lots of teams do that, and they get it the wrong way, where they fight back from a deficit, or they're a big underdog, or whatever, and they get that spot, and they do, and they just roll the dice, say all or nothing on one play. Well, I think that's dumb. In that instance, when you've outplayed them the whole game, to me, the better percentage thing is, like you said, outplay them in overtime, too.
Yeah.
And see what happens.
And the adage is, we never should have been in this position. Let's, go big or go home. But I agree. Like, let's just kick the field goal and take our chances, because at least it's a 1-1. You score, they score, you each get a possession.
Yep. Well, if you remember, though, the biggest thing that came out of that, though, North Carolina overachieved this year. They were
Great job by Mac Brown.
Totally. I mean, he's ahead of schedule with rebuilding that program. But the biggest criticism that came out of that was they ran a horrible play.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, Clemson on the roof. Like, oh, come on.
You better have that play, that 90% play.
Right.
So
at least
pocket.
Run the play that gives you a chance.
Yeah.
It gives the old Boise Statue of Liberty. Not that it has to be that one, but something in your back pocket that has a decent chance that you're going to run maybe once a year.
Yeah, and Virginia's obviously fortunate to be in here. And Josh, quick sidebar, since Kenny's not here and we can do our show the way we want to do it. Did you see Virginia getting smoked by Purdue the other night coming?
Well, you know what? Sort of. Only because I've been following the Cavaliers. Anyway, man, you don't lose three NBA draft picks and bring back. That's what it's supposed to show you, last year's team. There's no Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy and all that. And DeAndre Hunter, who, by the way, is starting for the Hawks on opening day.
Yeah.
I mean, so these guys are actually playing. And so I knew they'd be a little down. I'd been tracking their box scores. I'm like, this is crazy. Virginia's not scoring, but the opponent's scoring even less, because they're I see them holding teams in the 30s. I'm like, this is crazy. And Purdue didn't have much back. But when I saw that game unfold, I'm like, you know what? Not terribly surprising, because now this is the old Virginia people used to criticize. They're going to struggle to score. So you basically just have you know, Kay Clark, the young Hawaiian point guard who was everybody, and Diakite, and a bunch of new guys. Oh, and Braxton Key was a huge guy for them. He's out injured.
Yeah.
So it's a bunch of new guys for Virginia. It's a funny thing to watch, kind of.
Yeah, and I mean, just the total beatdown, though. I was like, oh, my goodness, here we go.
I was a little surprised, too, but it's like, yeah, Purdue's got
the whole Big Ten ACC challenge. The Big Ten really represented there. But anyway. That was our sidebar. Josh and I don't get to talk too much college basketball.
No, it's true. It's true. So anyhow, so this late game. So again, actually 55.5. I think Clemson might be able to do enough offense.
They can do that on their own.
I was just say exactly. So I would take the over because there's a decent chance Clemson will get the bulk of it. You just need Virginia to hold up, you know, to get in the barn a couple times. I don't think Virginia's going to get shut out.
I think they are.
Put a little nugget on the over, but I'm not playing it big.
Travis Etienne, the ACC Conference Player of the Year again, Offensive Player of the Year again, 2 years in a row. With Trevor Lawrence there, and it's just, I think Clemson is just about rounding into where they need to be right now. I think this is an absolute whitewash. Absolute whitewash.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
This was 36, I'd lay it.
I've learned the hard way to not take the underdog in this spot, that's for sure.
Yeah, not touching it just because it's such a big total. And like
you're
you said,
such a big total.
They're gearing up. They're getting ready for this. This is that time where they could win 56-0, but you know, if they're up 35-0 and they allow Virginia to get in the barn, you know, it changes everything real quick. So,
okay, so we'll mention a couple, by the way, that we didn't go in depth on, but just for interest, the MAC title game tomorrow. That's early, 9 a.m. kickoff, Central Michigan -6.5 against Miami of Ohio, 54 is the total there. Sun Belt, App State -6 against Lafayette, total of 56. And then you have Florida Atlantic in the Conference USA -8 against UAB, total of 49.5. Those are the others that we hadn't yet mentioned. So,
yeah,
day-long full of championship games, which, of course, would probably
beautiful day.
It'll probably make the Final Four speak for itself once we know the outcomes. But if you guys had one favorite bet tomorrow, what would that be?
Tomorrow, let me take a deeper look. One, my favorite bet tomorrow would be the Hawaii Rainbows +14.
That's the exact game that I was going to say. So I'm going to go with Georgia covering the 7.
All right, I'll go with the Buckeyes then. So we are going
I like that too.
Head off to a traffic report at the top of the hour here, and we will be right back in a few minutes on the William Hill Sports Show, ESPN 94.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. And before the break, we went over all the big college championship games tomorrow. So check out our Facebook page, Kenny B's ESPN Sports Handicapping. We'll put all our picks on there for NFL and college. But starting tomorrow at 9 a.m. with the last kickoff going around 5. Keep you busy all day if you like the college football. But transitioning into week 14 of the NFL, take a look at those games. Last night the Bears and Cowboys kicked it off in kind of, somewhat saying an elimination game, but battle 6-6 teams, and the Bears came out on top. It looked a lot better, 31-24. Cowboys have some issues, evidently. We'll move on to this Sunday slate and go right off the top here. Ravens at Bills. We know Ravens, speaking of one of the hottest teams, -5.5. And Buffalo's been looking pretty good lately, too. Total of 43.5. I've got to say, as well as the Bills have been playing some defense, man, it'd be underdog or pass, but the Ravens are so explosive, I just feel like I've probably got to lay off this one.
When the Bills are starting to get – or when are the Bills going to start getting respect here? I mean, they're – they're what are they, 8-3? Is that
nine
what they
and
are?
9-3.
And getting 5.5 points at home. I understand who the Ravens are, but I mean, it's this is an automatic take with me with the Bills here. I don't get it.
This is actually one of my favorite plays just for that reason. They're at home. They're beyond underrated, and I don't know if it's just because they don't have the sexy names on their team of anybody that really stands out. But
if you're sleeping on this team, it's about time to understand. That's why what I hoped it was accomplished with that Thanksgiving game is America can understand that the Bills are for real. That wasn't just, oh, the Cowboys are awful, which, I mean, they are. But the Bills are an absolute good team, and we're going to find out because they have Ravens, Steelers, and somebody else coming up, someone else pretty good coming up. So we're going to find out how good the Bills are in this month.
All right, we'll go down to the next game here. Packers at home against the Redskins, -13, with a total of 41.5. That's a low total, or seemingly.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Packers have gotten it going pretty decently lately. Washington has been a little more respectable. It was looking pretty bleak there for a while, but at least they've improved their effort. I mean, they beat Carolina on the road last week and led to, getting fired, Ron Rivera. I mean, again, 14 points in the NFL, I mean, I wouldn't touch it, but I also have no real desire to take Washington.
Redskins, if they win, they'd only be two games back of the
Yeah, they're mathematically alive of the NFC least.
Yeah, I know. But this is a game where I think it's just a Packers whitewash here. I think it's there's nothing the Redskins can do. Yeah, they're mathematically still in this thing just because of how awful. And you know the Cowboys are plus 67 points this year, and they're 6-7. That's wow. Something else.
Yeah, this is a game. If you force me to bet it, I'm going to take the Packers. Stay away from the total because it could be 35-0, you know, against that Redskin team. But it's still Aaron Rodgers this year has been so up and down. I mean, yeah, the Niners have a great defense, and they hold him in check. And then he came out in the snow and threw four touchdowns last week. It's just you don't know which one you're going to get.
Right. All right, next game here, Texans minus 9.5 against the Denver Broncos. Total of 42, Houston Texans at home. So basically almost laying double figures here. To me, this one's tough because speaking of erratic, I mean, the Texans put on a nice game, probably their best all-around game in that Sunday night showcase against the Patriots. Solid win for them. They've had a hard time stringing these victories together, though, and the Broncos are the type, or at least defensively, just good enough to give you a little bit of a hard time there. I'd still probably only have Houston, but not a game I have a lot of interest in.
And that's the thing is Denver's defense is going to keep them in it, and the Texans. You talk about it, you don't know what you're going to get from Aaron Rodgers. You really don't know what you're going to get from the Texans week to week. Never know. Absolutely not. Oh, I said it again. There you go.
And absolutely.
It's the Broncos are nothing for me here. I would love obviously the Texans are 9 points better than the Broncos. That's clear, but I'm not going to lay that ever.
Yeah, I mean, that being said, the Texans, you can't, I don't know, that Denver defense I think is going to keep them within that double-digit score. But, I mean, Deshaun Watson could come out and throw over three touchdowns, run for two, and it'll just be a blowout. But, again, another game that I'm going to stay away from. If you force me to bet it, I'll probably take the Texans.
All right. Next game on deck, pretty big one in the NFC. Got the Saints minus 2.5 against the San Francisco 49ers with the total of 44. Yeah, we saw the Niners come up pretty big last week. That was a heck of a game. Took the Ravens down to the wire. They had their chances to win the ball game. Didn't. Again, just, I think, repeatedly showing they're no fluke. I mean, took the hottest team in the AFC here, and now you have the Saints who sort of need to get things going, another test of their own. And this is one I actually do like a little bit. I like the Saints a little bit just because it's one of those things where obviously it's a really tight line or whatnot, but you know, at home, inside of a field goal, and you wonder if the Niners are playing the Seahawks. They've had a streak of tough games. I wonder if they hit the wall a little bit. I like New Orleans off the extended rest to come out on top.
Yeah, the fifth-seeded San Francisco 49ers
at
right here.
10-2. It's awesome. But we get to play the Cowboys if everything ended right
now.
Oh,
you're on the Niners?
Yeah.
I love betting the Saints at home. Always have, always will. Sean Payton, Drew Brees. Coming off the rest, huge game for seeding, for everything else. Two tough games in a row for the Niners. The schedule maker did not do them any favors here.
Three, even though they beat the Packers pretty easily.
Well, I don't consider the Packers on the level of the Ravens and Saints, but I understand what you're saying. But this, it's not really a knock on the Niners, but I love the Saints in this scenario. If I can get them under a field goal at home, give it to them.
As the resident Niner fan on this show, I'm more confident going into this game to have a good puncher's chance with the loss against the Ravens. You know, weather factor to play. Robbie Gould coming off that leg injury for his first game back factored into that. But I'm not betting this because everything JD said, you get a well-rested Saints team at home. You know, it could be disastrous. If it was over 3.5, I'd probably take the Niners just for the points because I think it's going to be a well-fought, close game. But 2.5, I mean, that last-minute field goal, you know, now you're out of the picture.
What do you guys think about the total? It strikes me as a little light. I'm not a big NFL over better. But come on, 44 in the dome with really capable offenses. I think the over is a pretty solid position.
Yeah, they both play pretty good defense. I mean, I think the Niners are one of the top defensive teams in the league.
Oh, they are.
And, you know, the Saints hold their own as well. But, yeah, automatically you look at in the Superdome, looking at overs, you don't see 44s that ever there. Exactly. I think that's telling you why.
All right. Next game is on deck. Cleveland Browns hosting the Cincinnati Bengals. Bengals got on track last week. They finally stuck Andy Dalton back in there, and they had a beatable opponent, of course, in the New York Jets. And they took advantage. Got the win column, and your Browns are sitting there still trying to make the most of this year that's kind of gone sideways on them. But the Browns, a few weeks back, actually, they did a pretty good job of covering against a bad team. They beat the Dolphins pretty good.
Good job, Browns.
Yes, that's what I'm wondering here. And another inferior team, -8, -41. I mean, with less pressure or whatever, the Bengals got their win last week. I mean, I like Cleveland a little bit here. I think they don't have a lot of trouble with terrible teams.
Yeah. No, I like the word you said, inferior. That's what the Browns.
Well, of course they were going to lose to Pittsburgh last
week. That's what the Browns
week.
Will always be to the Steelers is inferior, regardless. You know, Duck Hodges. Anyway, this game in particular, the Battle of Ohio. I think the Bengals are live here. They were banging on the door, finally got that win. What are the Browns just lost their Super Bowl. They might have their faces in the dirt. I almost said something else. And I think the Bengals are live here. I don't know. I kind of like that this is going to be a really close matchup here between two of our little brothers.
I like the 8 points. I just think with Andy Dalton coming back, it's like a renewed sense of energy. I think he's gonna have a nice game because that secondary for Cleveland, you know, I think he could take advantage of a little bit of that. And again, we've talked about quarterbacks you don't know where you're gonna get from. Baker Mayfield has just been all over the place. And
that's what I keep hearing is you know the Browns, how can you do this with so much talent, so much talent? At some point, like even with the Cowboys, are we overrating this talent? Do they really have this talent? Is it all Freddie Kitchens? Is it all Jason Garrett? At some point, the player's got to play, right? So, I don't know. The Browns, I was on the Browns bandwagon last year. I thought they were going to be pretty good. Coming up to this year, getting the hype that they got, this is exactly what I had in mind, and I love every second of it.
I think you can't say that they haven't underperformed with that talent. You have Nick Chubb. You have Kareem Hunt. You have Odell Beckham.
Jarvis Landry.
I was kind of only talking about Baker Mayfield, to tell you the truth.
All right, next game. We've had enough
taller
of the Browns.
Johnny, Johnny Manziel.
Was that?
No? I think we've talked enough about the Browns and Bengals.
Yeah,
so there's
the
better games.
That's
on the
one we've talked about the most
the
for
card.
Some reason.
Right. So how about Falcons -3 at home against the Carolina Panthers. Total 47.5. Speaking of which, this is interesting, right? So the Ron Rivera actually got fired before Dan Quinn. Now, how did that happen? The Falcons have been a bigger disaster. I guess he could be out the door if they lose this one. But Panthers went in the opposite direction. Falcons bounced back a little bit, but for like two games, and now you're back to having a terrible year. And this is an interesting one because, like, oh, do the Panthers play hard or do they mail it in after Rivera's gone? Most of the time you see a slight bounce back, though, and I still think the Falcons are pretty bad. I think Carolina actually probably comes alive here.
Yeah, I like the Panthers a little bit. What I do like, though, is the total. I like it over. I think I have that theory this time of year, two bad teams, not interested in playing defense. Let's go. Give me the over.
I'll take the Panthers in this spot. I mean, we've said it several times on the show. You take a team on the road that just lost their coach, they're going to cover, and then bet against them the following week. I think this is in a perfect spot for them against a Falcons team that, again, keep talking about underperforming teams. This Falcon team for the last 3 years.
Man, from 28-3, they have not been the same.
Right. All right, next game is Minnesota Vikings at home, -13 against the Detroit Lions, total of 43. And we saw the Lions on Thanksgiving, so the guy David Blaus is sort of a Nevada connection where he played at Purdue Purdue played in Nevada, so we know who he is. Third stringer out of nowhere, but he had a pretty good game, NFL debut against the Bears. Of course, they eventually fell apart and lost that game. I don't know, so is Blau playing again? I don't know what the update is. This line makes it look like he is. Vikings, as a huge chalk, have been, you know, kind of inconsistent. To me, it's tough, divisional rival. But I'd pass. To me, it's Vikings are pass with emphasis on the pass.
Yeah, the line says that we're not seeing Stafford, obviously. So it's automatically you would want to take the dog in a situation like this with the divisional game, obviously. But at this point, I can't do that. The Vikings are That's a fun team to watch. They do a lot of good things. Kirk Cousins is playing really well.
Dalvin Cook could have had the Seahawks beat.
They should have.
Show.
Yeah, and Dalvin Cook's a game time decision, if I'm not mistaken. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, I think it was frustrating because, again, as a Niner fan, the Vikings had one job to do, and it's beat Seattle. I think they easily could have, but it goes back to Kirk Cousins when he's on Washington. You don't know which guy you're going to get. Turns the ball over. This is the perfect bounce-back game for him against a light defense to just light it up at home. So if I'm betting it, I'm taking the Vikings all the way.
All right. Take a look at Jets, -5.5 against the Dolphins with a total of 45. Yeah, I say I don't ever see a time to really play the Jets as a favorite. Miami could be an exception, except when you jump in there, they had that huge win over the Eagles last week. Looks like a letdown spot. But I still need 7 points or more to consider an underdog, especially one as bad as Miami. So, again, no real interest in this one.
Yeah, I like the Jets here. I just – Le'Veon Bell's probably not going to play. He missed practice today. He has maybe the flu. I don't know what that guy does, if he even plays football.
A pretty big letdown spot for Miami, too.
Yeah, exactly. So, I just like the Jets here. Who knows? They tend to play well at home. Let's do it.
The Dolphins are not the Raiders, so I will take the Dolphins.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. We're going to go off to our last commercial break here, so please join us again in just a couple minutes on the William Hill Sports Show, ESPN 94.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the last segment of the William Hill Sports Show, ESPN 94.5 FM. Again, we're at the Club Calneva William Hill Sportsbook, and it's a nice setting to hold sort of like this old school sports book. It just sort of sets the tone for the content we deliver.
It does, absolutely.
Last set of NFL games here. Did I say something wrong?
I did. I keep saying absolutely. I didn't know it was a verbal crutch until somebody pointed it out to me.
But now you get self-conscious about it.
Exactly. Like, now I'm like, what am I doing?
Completely. Like you mentioned, it's just a habit. Everyone has them, whether it's a phrase you repeat. But then when it's brought to your attention, it makes it worse.
Yeah,
so
it
everyone
is.
Just kind of try to avoid getting too insecure about it. But so we went Dolphins, Jets. Here we go. Buccaneers -3 at home against the Colts. Total of 47. This is a tough one. Ken and I mentioned we shared a buy-in on this contest. And
yeah,
we keep getting beat by the Colts, which is we went 4-1 last week, and our loss was on the Colts. And so because of that, it's like, kind of a little bit gun-shy, but I kind of think getting 3 points, they're probably the right side.
Yeah, the Colts are a better team, up and down. I like the over in this one as well. The Tampa Bay especially, they like to throw the ball. They like to get after it. They don't play great defense, especially against the pass. So I like the Colts in the over.
I'll take the Colts. Stay away from the total.
All right, next game. Los Angeles Chargers on the road, -3. Shows you how far the Jaguars have fallen. They were thought supposed to be pretty decent this year. That is not the case. Chargers -3, Jaguars. They benched Nick Foles last week. They paid the guy a king's ransom, brought him in from Philadelphia. He was injured. They started Minshew, and he did okay. Not great, but pretty good. So Foles gets healthy. They say, hey, this is our zillion-dollar guy. We got to see what happens. He was just did not play well at all. So they benched him. I still think not healthy. Back to Minshew it is, and we all know what the Chargers have done this year after looking like they were turning the corner and making the playoffs last year, they have been terrible. So, yeah, not a lot of faith in either team.
So you're telling me I have to come up with an opinion on a Chargers-Jaguars game?
I take it you like the Chargers.
Yeah, Chargers go.
Yeah, I'll go with Minshew Mania and go the opposite way and take the home dog.
All right, let's see what we got here. Big game in the afternoon, AFC showdown. New England Patriots -3 against the Kansas City Chiefs. This is a game I like a little bit, total of 49, only because, right, Patriots took that loss Sunday Night Football, and to me it's a standard thing. Brady, maybe he's losing it, he's got no weapons, whatever. Whenever the Patriots endure a week of bad press, they go out and crush somebody. So even though I know the Chiefs are really good, this is the spot, situational spot where I like New England.
I'm with you there. That's the thing. Every time you start counting the Patriots out, which we started doing about 2002, by the way, they just come back right at you And the only thing that scares me a little bit is how well the Chiefs played last week against the Raiders. That was an absolute beatdown. And Mahomes on that touchdown run, you can tell he's healthy again.
He's healthy again. Funny stat, go look and Wingo throughout this morning.
Okay.
Quarterbacks under the age of 25 visiting Foxborough since 2001. You know what the record straight up is?
What's that?
0-29.
Wow.
And Mahomes is 24 years old.
All right, there you go.
Next one, Pittsburgh Steelers Science. At the Arizona Cardinals. Steelers are -3 with a total of 43.5. We saw last week it was interesting. The Rams were only 2.5-point favorite down there and put a pretty good beat down on them. Steelers are coming in about the same spread here, so it looks like the Cardinals' ratings going down. It was weird. They were competitive early. They faded late. Steelers are still kind of hanging in there for a playoff berth, but I don't know if this is the best spot after that rematch with the Browns. You know, I actually think there's some offense involved. I think this one probably goes over. Probably stay away from the side.
It's a rough spot. It really is a rough spot. Juju and James Conner are both out again, and you know it. And Antonio Brown's not walking through that door. Tommy knew it was Ben Roethlisberger. It's amazing they're 7-5. It really is. I'm really proud of the Steelers right now, but this is not a good spot. I wouldn't bet the Steelers in a million years in this spot. I'm not saying they can't win. Obviously they can. They're a better team. But Duck Hodges, you know, there might be a time where he starts reading his press clippings. Who knows? This is a rough spot going to the West after, you know, an emotional game, an emotional win against their little brothers, going to play the Cardinals. Who knows where the motivation's at? I like the Cardinals here.
I'll stay away from the side. I do like the total. I think that 43.5 is a little light, even though a lot of those offensive weapons for Pittsburgh's out. We talk about, you know, coaching versus talent. I think everybody's talking about Sean Payton doing what he's done without Drew Brees in the lineup and everything. You have to give Mike Tomlin yeah. all the credit in the world for what he's done with that roster to be at that 7-7.
I'm completely impressed. I really am.
Yeah. So I'll take the over. If I had to play it, I'd probably take the home dog again.
All right. Next game, we have the Tennessee Titans, who they're a team I've had a hard time figuring out, but actually visiting the Oakland Raiders, and they're a slight favorite. The Titans are -2.5 with a total of 47. Yeah, so I lost on fading the Titans last week and done it a couple times, but it seems like when I back them, they lose, so this is a tough spot. I will say, though, surface level, I still think the Titans are sort of, you know, erratic, whatever. I'd say this is a pretty good spot for the Raiders. I mean, they're coming off that really tough loss to Kansas City, but they've been pretty decent at home. I think if you're gotten to where the Titans are a road favorite, I think that's getting a little bit carried away in this one.
It's a little ambitious right there. Yeah, yeah, they've been playing great since the Tannehill move. They've really playing great. The way Henry's running the ball, Titans look great. Selfishly, as a Steelers fan, obviously I want the Raiders to win this game since the Titans and Steelers are both at 7-5. Raiders getting points at home. This is where you're comfortable betting the Raiders. Not when they're laying points at the Jets or wherever. This is where you're comfortable right here. I like the Raiders myself.
It's you know, the home dog again. I think the Raiders are actually a better team, even though Tannehill's been playing unbelievable since he took over. But I still think, you know, the Raiders just ran into a buzzsaw with the Chiefs last week. Not that they're all that great, but at home, they're a better team.
Yeah. All right. Let's go over our Sunday night game here. So pretty interesting matchup again. NFC West considerations here. Seattle Seahawks at the Los Angeles Rams. I believe Seahawks might have opened -1, but it's a pick 'em now. So pick 'em on the side, 47 of your total. Again, the Rams, just they're in pretty desperate situation as well. But I feel the same way as I did Seahawks as the 49ers, where they've had this series of close games, and they've answered the bell in all of them. I just feel like you sort of run out of those kind of games. I mean, their luck could have run out Monday night. It didn't. Feel like the Rams are more desperate, and they've matched up well. Yeah. Or the Rams lost by 1 at Seattle earlier this year in a game they should have won. Yeah. That's right. They shanked the field goal at the buzzer. I think this is payback time, and I like the Rams a little bit in this
one. Love the Rams. Love the Rams right here, just situationally. I mentioned earlier the point differentials for some teams. Seahawks are 10-2 with a +36 point differential. How about that? That's squeaking by.
Exactly.
Week after week.
Thing you mentioned is just because they beat the Dolphins like 62-0.
Exactly.
I mean, that explains it. Yeah.
It's exactly it. And it's where the Niners, they're both 10-2. The Niners are at 166, and the Seahawks are at 36. That's something. I mean, that's not the be-all, end-all, but that tells you a little bit about how a team is playing and how, you know, we talk about the rubber band stretching. I love the Rams in this spot. Primetime game, division game, fighting for their life. Seahawks stretching that rubber band. Give me the Rams.
Rams at home after barely losing to Seattle up there. And the fact that Gurley's been running the ball
and they played great last week.
A lot better. These last three, four games,
yeah.
He's the Gurley that we all expected last year and expected in the Super Bowl. So I really think this is a great spot for the Rams to get some revenge. And, again, the Seahawks are, you know, overplaying their position right now by squeaking these games out. I think they lose.
Right. It did seem like it was a bit of the old get-right game last week against Arizona. Like, the Rams have just been all over the place. They finally, you know, started looking like the team we expected to see this year. So our final game here, Monday Night Football, 5:15 kickoff, and, you know, the crazy NFC East that nobody seems to want to win. But you've got the Eagles who, at home, they're -9.5 against the New York Giants, who we know have had a really down year, but apparently rookie quarterback Daniel Jones is hurt or whatever, and they're looking at bringing in Eli off the bench to start, which is interesting. Of course, he's never done that, been in the position of backup coming in there. I'm sure he'll go in and play, but Eagles -9.5, 46. You know, as bad as they've been, there's no way I could take the Eagles as a favorite in this spot. One thing I was showing, Ken, I'll never get this at all, but last week against Miami at halftime, they were up seven points against the Dolphins, but it had been a competitive game. For some reason, William Hill offered 8-1 on Miami to come back to win.
It's crazy.
And I hammered it, and I sent Ken the screen cap, and I'm like, how did this even happen?
Yeah.
A touchdown underdog's usually like +250 before the game. They have that little faith. And anyhow, the Eagles had my attention earlier in this year. I thought they'd be a lot better. Like,
they just
keep letting down, so there's zero chance I'm jumping on this one.
Yeah, they are awful. Give me the Giants divisional game. Eli, this, who knows, maybe his final start ever for the Giants in his career, maybe. Give me the Giants +9.5.
Yeah, you got Eli coming back. I like the Giants, the +9.5 easily.
Well, the Eagles just haven't been really able to create any separation, you know, from anybody, much less you'll win a game. But they had Miami seemingly on the ropes last week. But for people who criticize Carson Wentz, and I'm one of them, it does make some difference, his weapons or whatnot. You realize last week he had a lot of yards and three touchdowns. Alshon Jeffrey back in the lineup helps. He has healthy receivers, so it's like, okay, that's one thing that is going to make a difference. But at the same time, if you saw any of this Eagles-Seahawks game a couple weeks ago, it's one of those deals where he's also part of the problem. He was missing a ton of throws, too, so he's underachieved so far. But
yeah, I agree. I mean, I think they probably sit back and look and think, you know, coaching-wise in terms of Nick Foles and everything. You never know what you're going to get, but he's definitely run out of it.
All right, head out to Kenny B's ESPN Sports Handicapping page to get all of our picks on Championship Weekend and NFL Week 14. We'll post the picks there, and we will catch up with you next week on ESPN 94.
Thanks for joining us for the William Hill Sports Show. Be sure to tune in again next Friday at 5 p.m. for all the action. This is KUUB Sun Valley, ESPN Radio 94.5.